always correct, as long as you're not talking political correctness. Bob McCowan in Primetime Sports. Now, on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour two for this Wednesday, the 29th day of October, 2014. We're getting close to the end of the month. I know that because 29 is a high number.
Yes, indeed.
That's a good comeback. I'm glad you
Yes, indeed. You jumped it in. Is a high number. And there are 31 days in this month because, you know, I always remember that because of Halloween, right?
Is that why you remember it?
Yeah.
I have to do the thing, the 30 days of September, October, April, June, and November. Never all the rest have 31 except for February.
Don't have to do it for December. Don't have to do it for October.
Everything... What are you doing? What's that? This thing? Oh, count your knuckles? I don't count my knuckles. I say the rhyme. I like poems. I'm very big on poems. A bear, however hard he tries, grows tubby without exercise. Our teddy bear is short and fat, which is not to be wondered at. He gets what exercise he can by falling off the Ottoman, but generally he seems to lack the energy to clamber back. Doug Smith will join us later. Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports and Glenn Healy of the NHL on Sportsnet. And Grant Fuhr will wander in here in a bit. Is he around? Is he here yet? Yeah?
Okay. He's in the building.
He's in the building.
Another book. It's with all these people writing books.
Yeah, you can't be happy with that.
No, I'd rather it's just one.
Especially hockey books.
One hockey book, yes. They fight for survival. Every year at this time, there is a
50 new hockey books.
Battle for survival among the hockey books.
Do hockey books, is it warranted, all the hockey books?
Well.
Do you think? I mean, you're an author and you've done a bunch of them, but you've done a bunch of non-hockey books.
You're right.
More non than hockey.
No, probably more hockey than non.
Really?
Yeah. Because in this country, that's still where it goes. It's still all about hockey. And
what's the last book you wrote that was your idea? Where you said, I got an idea for a book and went to the publisher rather than the other way around.
Gretzky's Tears, a couple books ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the last two I've done, you know, and were, yeah, I've got stuff on the go that's mine. But, Gretzky's Tears would be the last one. And that was kind of a sequel in a funny way to the Orr book. They kind of linked up. Every year there are, you know, that's the I guess the thing is that there are going to be some hockey books that do very well because of Christmas. People give hockey books for Christmas. They give it to their kids. They give it to their parents. They give it to their uncle. They give it to their buddies. And so you end up with a big wadge of hockey books published, some of which will do really, really well and some of which will not do as well. You know, that's kind of how it works. So here's the...
Some will do well and some will not do as well.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a, you know, one of those survivor kind of things, right? So, we'll know in a month or so how it's going.
So do you have a next project?
Well, yeah, I have that one. That's kind of already done for next year. That the one about the which is a photo book, kind of an art photo book. I think.
That one,
the Leaf 65 book. That's coming out next fall, so a year from now.
Right. And these are all photographs that many of which unseen.
Not yeah, all of them unseen.
All
yeah.
of them.
All of unseen, okay. and then a kind of a long piece that I wrote about about that training camp, which was a lot of fun. So that book is next year, and then the year after that, who knows? I'm working on some stuff, but right now I'm fully and completely. Dealing with one book and it's great. I don't have to do anything. You know, if that's one thing about writing someone else's book that, you know, it's Jordan Tutu's book. I've done a couple of things, but not much. I don't have to tour. I don't have to get on a flight at 5 a.m. and fly somewhere and do 12 interviews and then fly somewhere else.
He has to do that.
Yeah. Well, actually he's not doing much of it either. He's playing for the Devils right now. So he will do selected media appearances right. At some point, but it does take away some of that burden. Whereas usually this time of year, you know, if you're touring, I ran into our buddy Alan Doyle again the other day. We were doing the same show somewhere, and you know, he was in here
week or so ago,
and he has
lead singer for A Great Big Sea, by the way,
and
he's got a fantastic book.
Yeah,
like it's really fantastic.
Where I Belong, great book.
Yeah.
So he is, but his touring schedule is unreal. You know, he's down in the States right now, I think. But it's just a lot of planes and a lot of appearances, and it's pretty exhausting. So it's kind of fun to have one out there and be able to say, "There's my book," but not have to do any of the work. So other than the writing part.
So I guess if I had toured my book, I would have sold like 10, 20 million copies.
Probably. True. Yeah. Probably would have helped.
Damn.
It does make a difference.
Well, we did very well.
It does make a difference, though. If you, the more of that stuff you do, the better.
Really, huh?
Yep.
Well, I did like 2 signings. That's all I did. And then I did a bunch of phone interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were at half the signings.
I was at half of your signing. That's correct.
You were there a long time. John Malone gets 5 games. Is that right? John Moore, Malone. Why did I say Malone? Moore, 5 games. That seem reasonable to you?
I guess. I don't know.
For assault with a deadly weapon.
I guess. And we talked about, you know, as we
things you can get away with in a hockey rink.
I was thinking, you know, as I was watching the baseball game play out last night with the odd glance over at the Toronto Maple Leafs, but watching the baseball game, we remember we talked about it going sideways and the white flag moment and whether you would wave the white flag if you were Bruce Bochy. It got into white flag territory pretty fast last night. It's just like, we're not going to win this game.
Well, no kidding.
Nothing else we can throw at this one. Let's just get to tomorrow. So, you know, we were thinking game 7 about an hour into that game.
Oh, no, this cold water was splashed all over the party I was at.
So.
The whole plan was to sit there and watch the ball game.
Yes.
And tell lies. Because, as you know, it's a bunch of baseball guys.
Mm-hmm. But tonight, it's, you know, it's great. Like, game 7, World Series, been a fun series and a fun postseason, and all kinds of interesting stuff could happen. It couldn't be better. So I know what my evening is going to entail.
You're going to watch a baseball game.
I'm going to park myself in front of a baseball game and not be distracted by
I pray, you know, game 7, it's got to be good. I hate, like, watching last night, and it's not that I have a real rooting interest in this, but I really wanted a good ball game. I wanted that suspense at the end. Even if San Francisco, even if it does go to a game 7, you know, there was no suspense in this one.
No.
It was just a complete annihilation right from the get-go.
A lot of us, you know, started out as a lot of dinking and dunking, though, right? A lot of little seeing eye hits and aggressive base running and all the stuff Kansas City does.
But that's Kansas City, right?
That's what
you expect from them. If they're going to win, that's how they're going to win, usually.
But it was just kind of chip, 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 and suddenly, holy smokes, it's 7-0.
I mean, they were hitting home runs early in the postseason, but, you know, they've reverted to their normal selves.
But we can watch tonight, and we can watch to see if Bumgarner comes in and with how they use him and all that stuff we've been talking about. But now it's, you know, one game for everything, and I'm looking forward to it.
Now, the other thing that's on tonight is the Raptors.
Yes.
Well, I'm very excited about this basketball season.
Yes.
This is the most excited I've been since, the Carter years, and maybe only a year or two of those, where you really had a sense that this was a team good enough to do something. You didn't know exactly what. But you thought they're good enough to do something.
I guess there's a couple of questions. You're right. You know that, and it's last year was a great feel good year. It was fantastic,
but it was unexpected. It kind of snuck up on you.
Yeah, and you've got young guys who are still getting better, which is part of the attraction, right? So DeRozan's still getting better. Valanciunas is still getting better. Kyle Lowry's come into his own as an elite player. So there's that kind of upside. Plus, in the East, you look around and say, okay, we assume Cleveland's going to be really good because of who's there now. You assume Chicago is going to be really good because of who's there and who's healthy. You look at other teams like Indianapolis, they're not going to be what they were last year. You look at Miami, who knows what they're going to be like without LeBron. It's kind of wide open.
Yeah, although the argument's been made. If you look at what Washington did in the postseason, and you talk about a team that snuck up on people.
Yep, and again, a team that's on the rise, right, with guys who are just coming into their own.
Washington's an interesting group. I don't know that they're the parallel necessarily of the Raptors, but they're pretty close. It's a similar kind of gathering. So they're, you know, I still think the Raptors should win 50 plus.
Yep.
I think that's where the bar is for me. And yet, if they won 45, got into the postseason, and made it to the second round of the playoffs, I think everybody would be ecstatic.
What's the path from the team that is evolving now, though, to a team that could win an NBA championship, because those are two different things, right? Right. We're looking at a team that's, you know, and again, legitimate excitement, lots of potential in the East, definitely a playoff team, certainly a team that could win a round, maybe a team could go to the conference final. You never know. But if you look at the teams that could win the NBA championship, you're saying, well, that would be a team like San Antonio, which is kind of a one-off, right? Or a team with a superstar, at least one superstar. You know, that's when you talk about who's got a chance to win a championship. You have to have one of those guys, don't you?
The weakest link on this team potentially is Terrence Ross, although he has proven to be a good defensive player, and he had a 50-point night. Let's not forget that. But he was flawed in the playoffs against Brooklyn, and I don't know whether that's just being a young guy or, you know, I don't have an explanation for it. I would like to see more of Terrence Ross, and yet the philosophy that they preach is one of being a team, as opposed to, a bunch of individuals. So I'm not sure that Terrence Ross has to put up significantly better numbers in order for this team to improve. But it is one place where you're looking for an evolution.
Yep.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say. Yeah.
I think we know what we're going to get with Valanciunas. I don't think he's going to be the best center in the National Basketball Association, but he's going to be a useful guy night in, night out.
Yeah, I'd like to see what his ceiling is. You know, we're not there yet.
No, we're not there yet. And it's going to probably take another couple of years to get there. But he doesn't have to be the best player in the NBA, the best center in the NBA for this team to succeed. So T. Ross is the variable here. He's the one variable. And we'll watch with great interest. It's book season.
Yes, indeed.
Yep. If you haven't written a book, what have you been doing? You've been wasting your time. Everybody's writing books. I haven't written one.
Not for a while.
No, it's been a few years. I don't think I'm going to write another one. I haven't finished coloring the last one. The story of a hockey legend, Grant Fuhr. And he joins us in studio now. How are you?
I got no complaints.
That's good. How's your golf game?
Golf game's getting better. So got a few body parts replaced. So it's making the golf game a little better.
Good body parts replaced. You are getting old, Fuhr.
I unfortunately know that.
Used to play as much as you used to?
Starting to play again.
Yeah.
I mean, I had the knee done about a year ago now, so.
Left knee, right knee?
Right knee.
Right knee. Oh, well, that's okay. You can play with a bad right knee. You're a right-handed player.
I am.
Yeah. So it's
better now.
You can't play with a bad left knee, though. You can't, because you put your weight on your transfer weight.
Twist on it.
On the left knee, and it's bad news.
But no, it's good now.
That's good. Had you thought about writing a book for a long time?
No, I kind of got convinced.
Did you?
A bunch of people had asked me if I would ever write a book, and I hummed and hawed and didn't really think I would ever do that. But Bruce was my neighbor in Calgary. And
yeah, Bruce Dobigan.
We talked about it years ago and just kind of started fooling around with it a little bit, probably 2.5-3 years ago now. So somehow it happened.
What was the argument that convinced you in the end, Grant, that it was time?
Talking to my kids and such. Everybody knows a bit of the past and everybody knows what everybody thinks, but I never really said anything. So we decided we'd see if we could figure it out.
Well, that's true. You are, you're not a big personality, big media kind of guy. You're pretty quiet, pretty private, have been almost all your life.
I work good in the shadows.
Yeah. Well, is your perspective, is your perspective, do you think, different than anything else we've seen or heard about that time?
In the book, it might be more of what I thought and saw at that time, which I never really said much of. So just different views of what I saw.
Was it harder to play for a team that had all that talent up front and had such high expectations?
No, it was actually more fun.
It was.
I mean, I think if you look at the guys in the room, we all tried to make each other better. And the fact that we played an offensive system, you could make one or two more mistakes because you knew you'd get 4 or 5 goals every night. So that gives you a little bit of leeway to make a mistake. And at 18, 19 years old, it's a pretty comfortable way to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
When you do it, as with any memoir, Grant, how do you, when you were deciding, okay, here are the stories I'm going to tell and here's the stories I'm not going to tell. Right? That everybody's got both. Everybody in their life has got both.
I gave Bruce the leeway.
Really?
So he kind of sat down and decided which way we wanted to go through it. And he's like, is there anything off limits? And I said, no, you can pretty much cover whatever you want.
So it was no holds barred in that sense.
Nope.
As far as anything you're concerned?
Anything he asked, I answered, and we'd sat and talked about it, and of course talked about it a little bit on the golf course. So it was just an open version of it.
Who are you closest to on the team? Who's your best pal?
I get along with everybody. I mean, that's the best part. Marty and I still see each other a lot. Kevin McClelland and I roomed together for 7 years, so
right.
We're still pretty close. I see Wayne a lot. I still talk to Tick probably once a month. So the guys are all pretty close-knit family.
They talk about cliques in the room. You know, certain guys hang with certain guys, and it's natural. It doesn't mean there's anything negative about it. Was it that way with the Oilers?
I think we were different in that sense, that we all hung out together.
You did, huh?
I mean,
was that because the core of that team was young and came and started together?
I think so. I mean, I think our oldest guys at that time were Lee Fogelin and Yaroslav Pozar. And they were probably, I think they were 10 years older than I am.
Yeah.
So, and I think I was the baby of the group. But everybody did everything together. If you went for a beer, you went as a team. Guys went out at night, you went as a team. So it was just, Glenn made it so it was like a family atmosphere.
So it was like, you know, that Edmonton, you know, it's not a small town, but it's a small town in terms of, you know, professional sports. And you are the, you know, the Oilers are it.
It.
You guys are on top of the world. You know, you probably presumably couldn't walk around the corner without people knowing who you were. What was that life like? As you say, you guys going out on the town in Edmonton, having a good time. You're all young. And yet you're in a bit of a goldfish bowl there, aren't you?
But we could hide in plain sight because the guys did go out in town. You socialize with the fans. You talk to the fans. You spent time with them. You became part of the city. So you could just hide right in plain sight.
So you guys didn't have like a place where you could go and be.
You could always find somewhere
private,
to go.
About a private room or something.
Nope. We spent most of the time right at the same nightclubs as everybody else was going, hanging out with the same people. And I think that's why the fans liked us so much.
Look, you know, when you play on a team that has Wayne Gretzky on it, I mean, it's clear who the best player is. He's arguably the best player who's ever played the game.
I'd go for that.
But was he the leader too? I mean, he wore the C, but was he the leader?
He was. I mean, I think at the very beginning, Lee Fogelin was probably our leader.
Mm-hmm.
And besides Wayne and Mark, there were different types of leaders. Where Wayne led by example, but wasn't overly vocal, and Mess was vocal, and still led by example. So we were pretty fortunate. We had a room full of leaders.
Did the two of them ever clash?
Nope.
In terms of leadership?
Everybody was always on the same page.
They were, huh?
That's what made us a good team.
And you talk about Slats. You hear a lot about his coaching style and coaching philosophy and now managerial philosophy for many years, and even then as the general manager, managerial philosophy. But how would you categorize him? Was he a guy who recognized what he had and said, you know, the best thing for me is kind of to, as much as I can, stay out of the way?
I think so. I mean, he gave us enough rope to come close to hanging ourselves, but he'd yank us if we needed to be yanked, and he understood that guys do different things, play different ways, but got everybody to buy into the same system and got everybody to believe in it. And I think that was the biggest thing, is it wasn't that you had to impress the coaches, you had to impress the guy sitting next to you.
Mm.
And if there was one guy that wouldn't do that, then they moved him right away so that everybody bit into the same system.
Grant, do you think, you know, obviously it was one of the greatest offensive teams in the history of hockey, you know, maybe the greatest. Playing goal for that team, do you feel like you got your due as a goaltender because of there was so much attention on what was going on up front?
We had fun with offense. I mean, yeah, we were going to win some games 7-4, 7-5, but at the same time, you could give up 3 or 4 goals and play well. It's just the way that system was, but it was fun.
But, you know, goalies are always heroes on bad teams, right? Because they're the guy standing back there giving up 4 goals on 50 shots, and they're the hero. If you're the goalie for the Edmonton Oilers and give up 4 goals and they score 8, people say, well,
you still look pretty good.
Yeah.
It was all about winning, and that's all we cared about, was whether you won or not. But come playoff time, I think the one thing that people didn't understand is we could play good defense. If you had to win a game 2-1, we could do that. It's just that during the regular season, we didn't.
Didn't have to?
Didn't have to. I mean, most nights, you know, you'd get 4 or 5 goals, so you had 1 or 2 mistakes that you could work with.
Well, it was more fun for the guys up front to win, you know, to score 7 and win 7-5, but it may not have been as much fun for you.
That was as much fun. If you get 35 or 40 shots, it's always fun to be in a game.
Yeah. Was there one game that stood out as most memorable to you? And I know that's a hard one because you had, you know, so many championships.
It's a good question. I think probably your first game as a pro.
It was, huh?
I mean,
Tell us about it.
I'm from just outside Edmonton.
Right.
So for me to get my chance to play in Edmonton as my first game.
Almost hometown.
Hometown game.
Yeah.
You get all your parents, friends.
Was it a home game?
Home game.
Yeah.
And I lost.
Did you?
We lost 3-2 to Winnipeg. But at the same time, you got to play in the NHL. So regardless of what happens in that game, you can say I did it. And I think that's the one big moment that every kid wants.
Yeah. It's irrelevant now. I'm almost hesitant to bring it up, but I think it's important to understand that you were the first black goaltender to play in the National Hockey League. Was that an issue? Was that brought up to you? Was that a topic of conversation?
Living in Canada, no.
It wasn't, huh?
They treated you as a goalie first and foremost.
Right.
And that's all anybody cared, whether you could play or not. When I got traded to Buffalo, it popped up once. But other than that, all anybody cared about was whether you could play. I think it's been more prevalent since I've retired and the game's moved to non-traditional markets. I think that's brought more light on it than any time.
But did you see yourself as a groundbreaker? Was that something you were aware of in the moment?
It wasn't something I thought of. I mean, Billy Riley, Mike Marson, Tony McKegney, yep. Willie O'Ree, Herb Carnegie, they'd sure. all played before.
Yeah, exactly. there were black players in the National Hockey League. Hadn't been a goaltender.
So it wasn't really a new entity. And I hid behind a mask, so nobody really knew. I think that was the biggest thing.
Was there ever an issue in Buffalo?
I had one small issue when I would try to join a golf club and got denied.
Really?
But you go join another
club. Did that shock the hell out of you?
It surprised me.
I mean, being a Canadian, you understand, being a Canadian and growing up in an environment where it isn't really an issue, and now you go to a place that's 5 minutes across the border, 1 minute across the border, and all of a sudden, whoa.
It was the first time I'd ever seen it.
Yeah.
So to see it live and in person was a little bit different. And you figure that's 93-ish.
Yeah. So we're not talking about 50 years ago here.
You're out of the 30s, so you don't think it would ever happen again. But it happened, and it's not something you make a big deal out of. You find somewhere where people do want you.
What did they tell you? I mean, because obviously that's not what they told you, I would think.
Well, I found out through the media that's why I got denied, but it's one of those, I just went and found another golf club where people were happy to have me around.
Didn't worry about it.
No, you can sit and fret over it and you can just move on with your life.
So you didn't play the I'm Grant Fuhr of the Buffalo Sabres card?
No. No, I went over and played a place called Fox Valley that was a brand new golf club that was a great golf course.
And you still play a fair bit?
When I'm home, probably play 4 or 5 days a week.
Yeah. What else keeps you busy and interested?
I went and got married a month ago.
Oh, congratulations, or condolences, as the case may be.
So that's kept me busy. We just got back from the Bahamas on our honeymoon. So
nice.
I will wander around Canada for 4 days, and then I go play a celebrity event in Houston, go home for a couple of weeks, and then play a couple of tournaments for Nike.
You had aspirations to play the tour while you were playing and then immediately thereafter.
When I was young and foolish. And figured that if you're an athlete, you could probably get away with playing pretty much any sport, but we learned the hard way.
Yeah.
How far did you get on that, Grant?
I played for most of 1 year on the Canadian Tour.
Yep.
So, and I still try, and I'll play one event a year, maybe go try and Monday qualify for a couple of events just because I still like to play competitive golf.
Was that an eye-opener for you, not making it? Because, you know, as an athlete who's had success and had the success that you had, long-term success, over the course of your career, I'm guessing you almost feel bulletproof. And I know you're a good player. I mean, you're not Gretz. I've played with Gretz a few times. Gretz thinks he's a good player.
Well, you take for granted the work that you put into hockey is what they're putting into golf. And I didn't do the correlation of it, that if I'm putting 8 hours into hockey, they're probably putting 8 hours into working on their golf games. And I've got a lot of friends now that play mini tours, play on tour.
Right.
And I see the work they put into it and the time they put into it. And they put in as much time as we ever put in. It's every day.
It's every day. 7 days a week.
Rain or shine, they put the time in.
They're up there. They're on the range at 8 o'clock in the morning and play. And then they don't leave the range till it gets dark at night.
Yeah. So now I have fun tormenting them when I play with them. If I can steal a dollar or two from them, it's fun.
The game today. Do you ever spend time looking back at the tapes of those Oilers teams?
I've watched a few games, but not a lot.
Are you surprised when you see it?
I love watching some of the old Calgary-Edmonton series.
Yeah.
I mean, the game's fast. It's also a lot meaner than it is today. I mean, I think if you look at the hooking and holding and some of the going on after the whistle and all that, it's pretty good hockey.
It's more, there's more space.
There's definitely more space.
There's more space on the ice to be able to do things with. So could that Oilers team, how does that Oilers team have to play in this era?
Most
could they have played the same way as wide open?
I'm guessing we probably would have.
You would have, Honeyway?
I mean, that was the makeup of our team.
That was a character.
They liked to play wide open hockey, and at that time we were a good skating hockey club. So I would take our chances in today's game.
We wish you good luck with the book. You're going to be at Chapters in Barrie tomorrow, 6 o'clock, to sign copies of the book.
I am.
You're doing the tour, huh?
We're on the tour right now.
Yeah. Grant Fuhr, The Story of a Hockey Legend with Bruce Dobigan. We wish you good luck with it.
Thank you very much.
Nice to see you.
My pleasure.
Grant Fuhr, we'll come back with more. Primetime will continue on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Now, primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Twenty-six before the hour, McCown and Brunt, our Toronto studio. Some breaking news: Madden to the Cubs. Sounds like it's a done deal. George Hoffman joins us from Chicago. Georgie, what do you hear?
Not quite done yet, Bob, but it's pretty close. Pretty much assumed, but still, there still isn't a deal in place yet. Not quite done yet. But I mean, you know, when you looked at the landscape, as soon as Joe Madden found that. From his Northbrook, Illinois agent, that Alan Nero, that there was an opt-out in his contract, he left. And it was pretty logical where he was going because all the other jobs filled up, and this job simply fits him to a T.
Well,
and the Cubs know that, and they're negotiating to try to get him.
The other jobs filled up. I'm not sure that Madden had indicated he wouldn't have minded sitting out for a year to get what he wanted. Having said that, if the Cubs were prepared to make the move,
they have to fire somebody. It's not like it was an open job. They have to get rid of somebody.
Yeah.
But, you know, George, I was talking to last night, a Major League Baseball executive who suggested that if this happened, that there was no way that MLB would let it happen because of this, the taint, the smell of tampering here. Is anybody talking about that?
But there's no tampering. They haven't tampered with them. They haven't done anything. I think that would
presume the events are exactly as Joe Madden has stated, you know, publicly. But you know, he did exercise, if they spoke to him before he exercised his out, that would be tampering.
You know, that so far nobody knows. I'd like to say that that's silly right now. There's nothing that has indicated that they have done that at all. You know, they. He opted out of his contract, and I believe that's when the Cubs started to talk to him. And at the same time, you've got a very delicate situation here because you hired Rick Renteria last year.
Right.
This is his first year as the manager of the Cubs. He's got two more years on his contract. He guided them to, okay, this may sound really odd, 89 losses, the first time they've had under 90 losses in 4 years. But guys like this don't go around very often, and the last time that happened was a few years ago when Joe Girardi was available. And the Cubs made a big effort to get him. So I think you could see where Theo's head is at. Matter of fact, I got another phone that's calling ringing. Theo tried to go after Joe Madden in Boston. You know, he wound up with Francona. So he knows what his value is, but I don't think there's any tampering here at all.
The number that was being tossed around that Madden was looking for was 5 years, $25 million. In an era where athletes get ridiculous amounts of money, that doesn't sound too off the charts. But that's a big ticket for a manager. Any word on what the number might be, what the tenure might be?
I think they were willing to pay Joe Girardi that kind of money, Bob.
Yeah.
Money is not an object for this franchise. They're on the verge of selling 20% of it to get some more money for the projects they're doing at Wrigley Field. They finally found somebody to pay, you know, wind up giving them $400+ million. Money is not an object. I don't think they consider money an object, particularly with a manager who just happened to be out there, who happens to be believed by most as the best manager in baseball, and he became available. I don't think money is the object at all. It's whether Joe Maddon wants to come here. And the indications are from people I talk to, he does. But again, they're negotiating, and then you got to figure out what you're going to do with Rick Renteria. I can't see him being with the Cubs now. But you know, they may have to buy out his contract.
I would say that would be the least they would have to do.
The lease is right.
So at this point, as you understand it, it is not done, but it is maybe close.
Yeah, it's not done. It's not. They're still working on this. I've been talking to people today about coaching staff. Who could he bring? He can't bring his pitching and hitting coaches whom he's been with for a number of years, because the Cubs have a very good pitching coach in Chris Bosio, and they just hired a new hitting coach from Houston. But Dave Martinez, who has interviewed for gosh knows how many jobs.
A lot.
He played for the Cubs, you know, back in the 80s.
I recall.
If he does not get the Tampa job, it's believed that he would come here as the bench coach. I mean, the guy has a pretty good track record. And I think what he wants to do is he wants to go to a franchise that now has young players and has money. You know, they didn't have money in Tampa.
That's right.
And they won 90 games, 4 years in a row. So, no, nothing is done yet. But I mean, I think there's this strong belief, you know, some people thought this thing was going to be done by Friday. So the strong belief is that it's going to be early next week. And once again, the Cubs will trot out yet another manager, the third Theo Epstein has hired. Remarkably, that's a lot of managers to hire in 4 years.
that's
a ton of managers to hire in 4 years.
I think this one's a little different, though.
It is a little different. I mean, it's like I say, they don't. I mean, they're lucky. They're lucky he became available, because Andrew Friedman decided to leave, and he was not happy that Friedman left. And, you know, everybody's thinking, oh, Friedman, now he's going to go to Los Angeles, but they just gave a new contract to Don Mattingly.
Yeah.
You know, people thought the Angels, but Socha's got a contract that's, gosh, skyrocket money and is still there for several more years. This makes sense for a guy like him. It makes sense for the Cubs to get him, and now it's just, you know, trying to make sure that they can bring him in.
We'll keep our eyes open. Thank you, Georgie, as always.
You're welcome.
George Hoffman in Chicago.
This is going to be this
Maddon to Chicago.
Yeah, there will be. Cubs. This is going to be interesting, because mm-hmm. you know, everyone would agree that Joe Maddon did not just fall off the turnip truck, right? We all think he's a pretty smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in a situation where not only is the general manager left in Tampa, but the chances of his brand being affected negatively by what's about to happen there. You know, he's like, it can only get worse in a lot of ways for him, right? He's the genius who takes that team to the World Series with no payroll, develops all. But if he kind of looks around and says, hang on, we're not going to be really that good, and we still don't have any money, and the GM's gone, I'm looking at the pipeline here, and there's not another David Price or James Shields coming through, and I'm not going to look that smart when we're losing 95 games. And, there's these guys in Chicago that got loads of money, and there's a big upside. And that's why, again, if you're the Tampa Rays, you're saying somebody tampered here. I just think you don't jump off the diving board unless you know there's water in the pool.
Look, I'm not denying the possibility. I'm not as, and usually I'm pretty up on that
yes.
grassy knoll. I'm not so sure about this.
I just
don't
think he's
a
dummy, Bob. I just think he's a smart guy. I would want my T's crossed.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll find out, or maybe we won't ever find out. Glenn Healy's been waiting patiently on the other line, tapping his foot like
he's
Sonic
known for
the Hedgehog.
His patience.
No, he's known for a few things, but patience is not necessarily one of them. Hello, Heels.
There's no tampering in sport.
There you go. See?
Come on. You know, when they put these like 10 and 12 year deals together for players at 12:01 on July 1st, it's easy to put together a $100 million deal in 30 seconds.
That's right. The phone didn't ring till midnight. You're exactly right.
And what experience exactly do you have with this subject? Like, either tampering, or does anybody tamper with you, or otherwise a $10 or $12 million deal? You signed how many of those? Let me see.
None.
That's the number I was thinking.
But all that put together, the hockey world and the sports world, for most sports, really small. So you pretty much have a feel for what's going on as it's happening.
Yep. Oh, hey, an exciting hockey game last night as the Toronto Maple Leafs killed those juggernaut Buffalo Sabres 4-0. Buffalo had, what, 10 shots on goal? How is that even possible?
Well, it's only happened, I think, one time before. An abysmal performance. It has refund written all over it. You know, that's the team that they've got, and they're in the Connor McDavid sweepstakes until they get them.
I think they're as of today. I think Glenn, they, watching that performance, I think everybody should just concede, right?
Well, they're at least
Carolina.
You
got to watch Carolina before you make that assertion.
Well, if they give up nine, if they only get nine shots in a game, then I'll count them in. But as of now, I believe Buffalo would be the odds-on favorite.
And what would be so ironic is if Carolina and Buffalo head to head for the Connor McDavid Eichel sweepstakes, and the team that's third ends up getting them.
Maybe they can play each other, and they'll have a shootout, and it'll never end because neither team will score. They won't want to score to pass the other one.
But bad effort, and maybe that's the best that they've got. But they hung around for a while. Norvarth was pretty good in net, but you knew it was only a matter of time before Toronto was going to get it on track, and they needed that game. They needed to have a confidence game where their stars got back to playing the way they can play. And every one of them was a singer in the show. So, you know, they got the shutout. They got the goals from all their big guys, check off all the performances. And hopefully, for their standpoint, it sets them up for, a confident weekend of games against, Columbus, which is basically football on ice. And then your big game, which would be the Ballerinas on ice, Chicago, Saturday night.
So, and we contemplated the possibility of a loss to the Sabres and what it might mean. In hindsight, what do you think the significance of last night's victory wound up being? I mean, it was sort of important for, a game in the first couple of weeks of the season.
Yeah, I don't think anything catastrophic would have happened. I don't think that they would have fired Randy because of that one loss. I mean, if you had a 3-4 record down the stretch last year, you would have made the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, but they have a strategy. There certainly is a level of expectation for success this year, and nothing less than playoffs would be defined as success. They have to make it. And if it doesn't work that way, then, Babcock's name gets mentioned every week, every day on the station. They probably have Plan B in their back pocket somehow. But that would be tampering if they had talked to Babcock.
That's right. That's exactly right. It would be tampering. You're correct.
That would never happen. But I don't think you make decisions knee-jerk where, okay, that's it. We're dismantling the team and everyone's got to go. No, I think they understand that you've got to build it the right way. They've hired a whole group of assistant coaches for a reason. They have got some new players for a reason. They've got basically a whole new front office with the exception of one guy. And they're about to build this the way Brendan Shanahan believes this has to be built.
What do you think Carolina gets for Eric Staal if they decide to make a move?
Well, Eric has to want to go first. And, from what I hear, he's not about to just pack up and leave because teams are calling. I think closer to the trade deadline, you'd probably get a better feel for that player's value because there'd be more suitors that would be looking at potentially picking him up, and your cap dollars would be far greater, far less for him as there's less games in the season. So I couldn't imagine, but it would be a lot because he's their guy. He's the guy who delivered a Stanley Cup to them, and I don't think they're about to just hand him off to somebody else for nothing.
How about the potential change in ownership there, and how is that going to affect the way that franchise deals with him and in general? What do you think is going to happen there?
Well, probably a little less loyalty based on the new group, right? Anytime you get a new coach, we always joke, new approach and new ownership, you certainly are going to have a different look. Yeah, it has been tough there. They haven't, sold a lot of bums to the seats. They haven't had a lot of success. They are a team that has to make the playoffs to have a chance of breaking even or making money. There's been some difficult times in Carolina. I mean, there's a team that less than 10 years ago won a Stanley Cup, but it's not that way now.
If Staal goes, is the franchise at any risk? I mean, that may be too strong a term. Let me say this. Given his history, stature, and the fact that he is clearly the big drawing card in a season that isn't going to produce a lot of W's, if they move him, is, I mean, you got to think there's a whole lot less bums in the seats.
For sure. And you know, there are, you know, we've talked about this. There's three ways to improve your team. You do it at the draft, you do it on free agent day, or you do it through trades. So that is one way that, you know, their club can improve their team. Now, would it be roster players that they're looking at? I think a lot has to do with the vision that they have. If their vision is we're rebuilding like Buffalo, well, that's going to be draft picks. And
yep.
then you better have the scouts in line to do it at the draft. But one thing is clear, since they won the Stanley Cup, whether it was through the draft, free agent day, or through trades, Jimmy Rutherford didn't get it done.
Yep.
Because you, when you're whispering that Yuri Kalusti is your best player, you got some issues.
I guess the thing I wonder about there long term, though, Glenn, is, you know, no one's going to question Peter Carmano's commitment to the market or to hockey, right? He's passionate yep. about hockey. He won there. He committed to winning there. You know, there's a lot of kind of intangible factors other than the bottom line for Peter Carmanos and the way he's operated that franchise. If you bring in somebody, whoever comes in after him and buys the team or ends up as the controlling interest in the team, you know, it could be a very different equation there. You know, I think they, in some ways they've been really lucky to have Peter Carmanos as the owner.
Yeah, and Peter Carmanos as an owner was probably looking at a $30 million cap just a few years ago. And worked his team, not as a cap team, but as a budget team. And so, mm-hmm. you know, as we start to see revenues climb, and the projection is that the cap goes north of 70 next year, and within 5 years is going to creep up to the 90 million range, then you have a real issue. Because you've got a price point for tickets, you've got an unattractive fan base that's not coming, and this isn't a place like Toronto where you just say, when can we print the money? Because we've got lots of it.
Do you think the Maple Leafs would be a serious contender for Staal if, in fact, Carolina was so inclined to have those conversations?
Well, I think they've been looking for that player since the days of Matt Sundin and Doug Gilmore. And if you look at every club that builds championships, and it's Chicago with Taves, it's Kopitar and Carter with the Los Angeles Kings,
yep.
you know, you've got to have a couple things that are guarantees. One is a good goaltender, and L.A. had that in Quick. And you got to have a good defenseman, and LA had that in Doughty, and you got to have real good strength up the middle. And if you don't have those three elements, you're not a playoff team, and Toronto does not have those three elements. So one of them would be Staal. That would be a good starting point.
I didn't want to speculate as to what Carolina, I guess you can't speculate what Carolina would want in return, given you don't know whether they want to have a, you know, get some veterans in there to try and actually play better, or whether they'd be looking for nothing but young players and draft choices.
I think young and cheap would be probably.
Or young and cheap, yeah.
So the strategy we will see once that deal is made, if it's rostered players, then the incline is going to be a lot steeper than most teams that just build it the way the Jets are building it, the way Calgary's building it, the way Buffalo's going to build it. And as we get closer to the deadline, you're going to have a lot of people making calls about that player.
Well, yeah, and I would think the Toronto Maple Leafs would rather make that deal sooner rather than later. They don't. They really would not prefer to wait until the deadline, because it might just be too late for them at the deadline.
Correct.
Where Carolina, on the other hand, may be inclined to hang on to this guy until such time that, you know, they have to move him.
Well, Carolina's got the assets, so they are the
they
are in charge.
Yep,
fully in charge.
It's their wheelhouse.
And you know, ultimately, the player is the one who's got full control, because he's the one with contractual right to say should I go or not.
Yep, that's right.
So,
and whether
we'll see
he's
what Chapter Two brings,
and we will follow Chapter Two, following as usual Chapter One, which was today. Glenn Healy of the NHL on Sportsnet. We're going to take the break. Doug Smith of the Toronto Star will join us. The Raptors opening night against the Atlanta Hawks. How good can this team be? And Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports all ahead. This is Primetime.